Greetings to ladies and gentlemen. This is, or as we now call you, Podcasterites. It is the podcast with a K. With me are James McLean and Brian Terranova. Hi, co-hosts.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, excellent. Hey. So they're both chatty today, as you can see, dear listener, viewer. And you can, you're not here right now, but you may be listening later on. You may hear comments from people who have interacted with the podcast if you're listening on Stitcher or Audio Boom or iTunes. Don't worry about it. You just join in next time we do it. It'll still make it for a great show, as it always does. If you are on iTunes, please give us some reviews and stars. That would be awesome. So far, the only people who have done that are my wife and maybe Brian. So we need... Okay, it's just my wife then. So... so we need your help there to get the podcast with as big a profile as it had in its old feed, because we had to change feeds on iTunes, you see. So here today we're talking about the Zygon invasion, the seventh episode of Doctor Who Series 9. Before we go on to that, and just while I sort out the social networking stuff so everyone knows that we have finally gone live after some technical issues. Guys, are you having a good weekend? Have you had a good weekend?
Sure.
Yeah, good.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and James?
None of your business.
Right, okay, fine. Okay.
It's rough.
Oh, it's like that, is it? Okay.
No, it's just like, why should it? Why should you not interested? Seriously. I mean, I could give you the criteria of my weekend. You wouldn't want to really know. And
I'm interested.
No, you're not.
That's why I ask you. Despite myself, I quite like you. I think you're quite a nice guy, and that's why I'm interested.
That's it, exactly. You quite like me. You think I'm quite a nice guy. But it doesn't mean that you're interested in my weekend. I can see your eyes shifting. You see, this is the problem with podcasts, is that I can see your eyes shifting nervously as you're having to consider this.
It's not a problem. No, that wasn't nervousness. That was befuddlement, James.
Oh, it just seems like, you know, we've been doing this for so many years. Every weekend's the same as the other.
Okay. Brian, what did you do at the weekend? Okay, so just as a summary, dear listener, Brian dressed up as David Tennant and James cried under his bed.
There we go. Why did I need to say anything? Of course he dressed up as David Tennant.
I went to my brother's band was playing a show, and I was going to go to the show, and I was going to go as, get this, me, right?
No!
Yeah, I know, right? When does that happen? But then I looked and I said, wait a minute, hold on, it's Halloween tomorrow, because this was Friday. So I said, well, let me see, this is probably a Halloween-themed event. And sure enough, it was, and I didn't want to go be the only guy there not in costume. Hell, everybody who worked at the place was in a costume. So, yes, I broke out the doctor because I'm lame and I didn't have any other costume this year.
You broke out the doctor.
I did. It was a harrowing mission.
That's kind of what happened last night, actually, isn't it? Basically, UNIT broke out the doctor.
Yeah.
Because the headmistress couldn't cope with the Zygon invasion of 20 million Zygons.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of good stuff about this episode. There's also some bits that kind of maybe, they still haven't got over that. But what I really do like about the opening sequence, actually the whole opening sequence, but I did particularly like it wasn't ashamed to say it was a follow-on from The Day of the Doctor. Basically, and I thought that was quite refreshing, because so far this series we've had sort of like sly nods that have kind of been very self-indulgent. At least this time it made it clear to the audience that it was being self-indulgent and why it was doing that. You with me?
Yeah, I don't agree.
You don't agree?
No.
Why do you disagree? I'm not sure.
That's
a fact.
No, I don't agree, because I kind of felt that was one of the biggest issues with the episode, and it's one that you can't really preach on these podcasts, because people listening to these podcasts love those sort of things. But ultimately, if you want to look and ask why is Doctor Who perhaps having a little problem in the ratings at the moment, I think that's exactly one of the reasons. I mean, Day of the Doctor was, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
So you're asking people on the very first moment of establishing to remember something from 2 years back. Now, you know, unless you've got an extremely popular, highly serialized show like you do get in the States, that's a long time to ask people to go fish their memories back to a minor plot point, which wasn't even a big plot point in the episode. So, yeah, when I started off, I was thinking, you're hinging a hell of a lot on this. Mm-hmm. And if I was a casual audience, because people say, oh, well, you know, casual audiences, they're not stupid. People watching the show, you don't treat them like they're dumb. It's not that they're dumb or they're stupid. They're sitting down on Saturday night with their food. They want something they can watch and digest without having to think about too much. And as soon as you start calling back to an episode 2 years ago, I think you've got a problem. I thought it was a really stupid idea. I think they'd have been better off running this as a new story and then just harking back to, you know, something that was set in motion 2 years ago as a side comment. So you let reference go in, but it doesn't hook the whole story on something that happened 2 years previous, which didn't actually happen 2 years previous, but has been established in this episode did happen 2 years previous.
And what about Tea Dude? What do you think?
I guess I don't really have as big of an issue as James with it, but it did kind of seem to me, rather than, hey, here's a fun story we can tell, it was a, people complained during the 50th that we never gave them a resolution, so, okay, why don't we make that resolution? It's kind of how I felt about it. It seemed like an afterthought rather than, here's a good idea for a story. You know, especially when they make it so ridiculous. You know, 20 million Zygons living among humans, and that's not going to really seriously affect resources on Earth. You know, a sudden boom of 20 million living among us. It's a little odd to me that. I think maybe they could have made the number a little smaller.
Smaller.
Yeah. Hmm. A little more believable. Like, a community of them.
Yeah. I mean, there is in Islam... immigration and Islamification and Islamophobia allegory dancing in the background,
yes.
With its cock out painted purple, basically, because it's not hiding, is it? Pardon me, dear viewer, for the language there. So that's in there as well. And we don't tend to shy away from these things on the podcast. If Doctor Who's saying something, then we need to talk about it. So. I'm going to come to James now. Was it a little bit unsubtle?
I don't know. I mean, I think it was too devoid from any real political or social commentary to even really talk about. I don't think there was anything there worth commenting about in current affairs. It felt it had more in relationship with Battlestar Galactica, quite frankly.
Okay.
Which had done all this before. So, mm-hmm. And yeah, I didn't feel it was done with any subtlety. I didn't think it was done with any... It didn't... I mean, my problem with this episode was that I didn't care about anyone in it. No one was nice. I mean, they said that these Zygons, that, you know, the majority are really nice ones, and we saw two possible nice ones as girls, and that was it. Everyone, yeah. All the rest were villainous. All the humans we saw were idiots, they called them fearful or worried, but essentially they were xenophobic, intolerant. Even the ones we're meant to like Ledbritt Stewart was annoying, and to a point, you know, and quite frankly, far more murderous without a feeling of charm or comedy that Nicholas Courtney brought to the role.
Yeah.
So she just felt horrid. I didn't care for her at all. I didn't care for her much before this. I certainly didn't want to speak to her. I didn't want to follow her in this episode. So there was no one. The only person was Osgood, who to me is a horrible fan service meta reference, which just takes away from any drama in the show. So you're left with no one. I mean, even Clara, who was a Zygon for the whole thing, I just dropped Morph on the floor.
No!
It didn't do anything for me at all. Because of that, and as I say, I didn't think there was anything in the politics that it was saying or needed to be said. I just think these sort of politics. I don't want to say should be kept out of television because that's just censorship. But I think they're very hard to translate into issues like this, or certainly say something new. After 10 years, I think Galactica did everything you needed to do on this.
Yeah, but I mean, is it not just the same as Russell T. Davies satirizing the weapons of mass destruction, or Robert Holmes satirizing the Taxman.
Yeah, but this has already been satirized. It's already been dealt with within the genre. As I say, Galactica dealt with this issue for pretty much 5 years and did it fairly well, sort of taking the audience and positioning them on the side of insurgency, on the side of governments, on the side of the common person. It sort of tried to approach all these issues as humanistically as possible, but not secular. There was a lot of religion in there as well. So it covered all the things which surround these sort of political issues, and it did that well. This didn't cover anything. It didn't position itself on any side. It just, that's what I kind of feel, that to sort of talk about it as a story about politics almost insults the politics. It was a story about science fiction using very basic ideas that you'd find in real life, and then making it feel vaguely uncomfortable because you know it's trying to talk about politics, but it's not managing it. Mm-hmm. And it's just not doing anything for anyone involved in those political spectrums. It just felt... just be a science fiction show. If you don't have the space in the room to handle a topic as big as this, and it is a big, contentious and volatile and sensitive topic for people across the spectrum, don't do it.
Don't do it. Okay. So we've got our viewers coming in and out. So if you have any comments, then do leave them on the Hangouts page or on YouTube or on Twitters or on Facebook. Text us, ring us if you've got our numbers. Maybe not that. Now, James, you weren't here last week. Now, Brian and I had a chat about units.
Yeah.
The basic outcome of our discussion was that we just don't give a damn about them.
Yeah, I felt that. Did you feel that this week, then? Pair of you?
Did I feel that this week? I was a tiny bit more interested in Osgood, but that was mainly because she didn't die, so I was just trying to work out whether she was the human or the Zygon Osgood. And I was slightly more impressed with Kate until it became wholly obvious that the copper was a Zygon.
Those are some of the things that, this isn't my unit kind of aspect, but it was kind of guessing that Clara was a Zygon and that cop in that small town was a Zygon were super easy, ridiculously easy, to the point that you just hopefully they're not going to go there. Hopefully they want us to think that, and then it'll be the real surprise when we find out that they're actually the human versions and it's not that. And the same thing with Christian, I did feel a little bit more connected to Osgood this time round. Mm-hmm. I felt that there was a little bit more of a person to her rather than a caricature of a Doctor Who fan, despite the fact that she's wearing the Doctor kind of outfits. But I will say that, skirting around the issue of whether or not she was the human or the Zygon and really kind of not telling us that, like, I like the idea that Osgood wouldn't want to tell the world. I like the fact that she felt that connected to the good Zygon, which it seemed like, okay, there was a good Zygon here in this story aside from those little girls. But I don't like the fact that, they want to just keep it completely open-ended, that we'll never know kind of thing. It seems a boring thing to me. But I started to actually like her. Kate, I have to say, it's a silly thing, but Kate goes to, Truth and Consequences was the town?
Yeah.
And all I can think is she's this military personnel. She's got her sidearm. She's entering this town as a lone unit officer, which is possibly overrun by Zygons, and she's wearing, leopard print high heels. what is that? Don't you have military gear? Don't you have boots that you could wear? You might have to run in a hurry, And I think we already covered this ground in the last Jurassic Park movie when they flipped out on, I don't know, who was that? Gwyneth Paltrow? Who was in that movie? I don't even remember who was in that movie. But she was wearing red high heels running away from dinosaurs, and it's kind of like, okay, great. But it is kind of like, you are military. You'd think you'd go into this town maybe with a little bit more than even just your sidearm, too, since the Zygons are there, Zygons. Yeah, I didn't really feel that connected to UNIT. The woman that Clara was with the whole time, I just felt, what is this woman doing here? Everybody's so unsure of themselves in this unit. The last time we saw Kate, she didn't know how to run the operation. She brought in Clara. Osgood was so, every time we saw her previously, she was always just so kind of squirrely around people. it's like, okay, why are you in the position that you are in? And then now there's this other woman that just, I don't even know her name, just feels like she can't handle anything. And I just wish they would put some, I don't know, authority back into UNIT, not just likable characters, but make them actually seem like they are a power against these creatures that are invading us. So yeah, no, nothing made me like them more this week.
The character played by Jay Griffiths, she was on TV a lot about 15, 20 years ago. She was in The Bill, and then she was in Bugs, which was one of those BBC One Doctor Who replacements. She's laughably ineffectual in Doctor Who. She makes Kate Stewart look like a seasoned veteran, basically. And she's, yeah, her character's just called Jack in Doctor Who. But I do notice that, of course, she's Kate Stewart. There was two Kate Stewarts, wasn't there? So did we lose the Zygon Kate Stewart? Will Kate Stewart be resurrected next week?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering too, yeah.
I don't care.
I know.
I thought you might have said that. So let's narrow down, let's zoom into the Doctor, who, like the Cyberman two-parter, or the Master Missy Cyberman two-parter at the end of last series, was jetting about in his presidential plane and found that he was well behind what was actually going on. But was he more... He felt to me like he was... Back last series, we kind of agreed that he didn't really feel like he had anything to do. But he did today, in this episode.
Did he? Really?
Yeah, I think he did, yeah.
I don't think
lots
he did
of
anything.
Talking. Oh, I think he did a lot of talking.
I like
he
the
spoke
way
to the Zygon.
He spoke to Zygon. He stood around a bit. He watched a really awkward standoff between some shapeshifters and some incredibly stupid troopers. And did nothing, just stood there impotently. I'm sure it's that plane. I'm sure there's something in that plane which affects the Time Lords. It makes them impotent to action.
Maybe he gets travel sick.
Well, it just seems, again, it felt very much like the Master episode, because he just felt like he was outside the story. He didn't seem to have any real role to play. He didn't seem to even have any particular interest in it.
Guys, you got to remember, though, he's the president of the world, and as we've learned from past presidents, just saying.
So, yeah, he was not engaging. So there was nothing that really engaged it for me. And, yeah, the scene with the soldiers being, you know, one of them going into the building, I could understand. But the way they all followed in just looked, you know, as... If I was part of any armed services across the world, or anyone involved in military and saw that, I'd be thinking, what the hell are they doing?
Can I ask a question? This is a little bit personal. You might not like it. Would you shoot your mother in the leg to establish whether or not she was an alien?
No, but I might actually push on those questions that she's refusing to answer.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Then. Yes, yes.
And I'd just like to add that none of us have had any military training whatsoever.
I just kind of thought there was other ways around it. I mean, surely they've got some tear gas or something. That would, you know, something better than just walking into the building. Those are the only two options.
I completely agree with you. I would have pressed further on the questions, and then I would have had all the Zygon people stay outside with my troops while I went into the building, possibly just to check it out, you know, or sent a soldier in to check it out. Like, there's no need for everyone to walk in with every Zygon, and... the woman that was in charge there too, like saying kill them all kind of thing, you know, it was kind of like, what the hell? And the doctor's not even like trying to stop her. The doctor gets to that town and he's sitting there going, hey, try not to kill everyone. Really, shouldn't it just be, hey, don't kill anyone, let's figure out what's going on, let's not be trigger happy. No, try not to kill everyone, I need someone to talk to. How doctorish is that? You know, like, come on. I don't know, it felt off to me.
Okay, so that leaves us with Clara.
Mm-hmm.
Who, now, I'm pretty sure that neither of us, this trio of Doctor Who fans, was fooled by the switcheroo for particularly long. I spotted it when she put her hair up. James?
Well, I I kind of felt that happened just because of the plot sequencing. She goes into the flat, then comes out. And then it feels fairly pointless.
Well, exactly. That's where I was too.
So, what I want to know is, I personally, I feel that Clara was the strong point of the episode. Most of what happens, if it's not following the Kate Stewart or the Doctor and the woman from the thick of it, is following Clara. And a little bit of slightly different acting from Jenna Coleman. Rocket launcher, been a bit arch on the phone to the Doctor, that sort of thing.
Yeah, but it didn't make her likeable, though, did it? And okay, she was a Zygon, so she wasn't meant to be, but then you still got the same problem. You've got another person that you're not engaging with. The problem with substitution episodes of any genre, obviously they tend to be science fiction, but in the science fiction genre, is that you've got to have people that you care about being substituted or feel some connection to. When suddenly anyone can be substituted, it can become very flat, unless that is the absolute drive of the story, like, say, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. But this, there was no one left to really feel any concern for, particularly, as I say, unless you were connected to Osgood or the Doctor. That was it. And to be honest, when Clara said, oh, I'm really enjoying this, that, and almost like the show was aware that that could have easily been a Clara statement as much as it was a Zygon statement, which, again, you might think, oh, that's a bit of a deft bit of double talking for the script. It just makes you kind of think, well, actually, she's pretty unlikable, isn't she, if she finds that sort of thing. And the fact that I think she would actually say that if she wasn't a Zygon doesn't say much for how Clara's progressing either. So, again, I mean, the thing is, this story, I've got to say, I mean, it was as usual, it sounds like a bit of a get-out clause for criticising it, but it was, you know, it was some great locations. There's nothing wrong with the acting to me. No one bothered me particularly. There was perhaps a couple which I felt were a little over the top. But there was nothing wrong with it per se. It's not saying it was a terrible Kill the Moon story, but it just didn't work for me at all. I mean, I was, as I said, I started looking at my laptop and thinking, you know, when's this going to go? Because I just don't care what happens. How can I care? There's no one here to care about, apart from the Doctor, who I know will survive.
Okay, well, interesting Kill the Moon cross-reference there. Same writer. Let's jump into the comments. Colin Grigson's view, and hi, Colin. He says, hey, guys, well, I like this one a bit more than last week's and the week before that, but overall, I'm just not enjoying Doctor Who these days. There's just something about the current approach to the show that isn't appealing to me. I can't really put my finger on it. Once again, Clara outsmarted Kate, this time with the truth or consequences conundrum. I'm starting to think Clara should be the one running UNIT. Would the Doctor really be okay with UNIT killing a few Zygons? I didn't think Capaldi looked very comfortable saying that. As I understand it, this is an episode that underwent a few rewrites. So if we find by the end of next week's episode that things don't weigh up properly, that might be why. And when I say rewrites, I mean late rewrites, which I'm not at liberty to expand on. But that kind of thing. So, not without getting someone into trouble anyway. So, with that in mind, and what Colin says there, we find ourselves back at this old chestnut of Doctor Who Series 9 approach. Where are they going with it? Why are they doing it this way? Some of it's good, some of it's bad. Let's just pick up the tablet. And because I don't want to go over old ground again, which we have done a lot recently, this whole thing about, you know, Doctor Who is, you know, it's on later, the ratings are suffering, which we're going to come to that in a moment. But the whole tonal thing and whether it's appealing to casual viewers, as well as it is to, and you know, there are fans that aren't being that engaged, as Colin's just observed, they're being a fan. Where are we? We want... there we go. We've got that, and we've got that. Overnight viewing figures for the Zygon invasion. Now, this kicked off at 8:15 on Saturday evening. so a little bit earlier than previous weeks, and again it follows Strictly Come Dancing. Doctor Who had 3.87 million viewers on the overnight unofficial figures. That is almost a 20% share of the available viewing, available viewers. But again, Strictly Come Dancing had 9.35 million people watching. So Doctor Who's got less than half of that. And The X Factor had 5.63 million, and The X Factor started more around the same sort of time as Doctor Who. So basically, people are watching those two shows and not watching Doctor Who. Why are they doing that? I think scheduling is a major issue here, isn't it? But all, and the time slot. But putting Doctor Who against The X Factor when Doctor Who's not doing too well with the overnights just doesn't make any sense to me. You know, it was the fifth most watched program of the day, so it's not a disaster. But again, there's people still talking whether this really matters, these figures really matter. And in the wider, you know, international viewing side of things for Doctor Who, no, they don't. But in terms of what the BBC expect from Doctor Who, then the BBC don't expect Doctor Who to get under 4 million viewers on the overnights.
But this is it. I mean, I still think those people who say, oh, it's not a problem, or even The Guardian's weekly reviewer for Doctor Who, which, again, smells of a fan. I don't mean that in a derogatory way, I suppose. But, I mean, again, it was that same sort of, oh, well, you know, if you consolidate it, it still isn't that bad. It still consolidates around 7 million. Going, yeah, but you're consolidating it with iPlayer, which is a very bad statistical... has a statistical margin for error. So you can't sort of say the same. The fact is, it's not pulling in the same people. If this wasn't Doctor Who, Mr. and Mrs. Sci-Fi fan, whoever you are around the world who says, oh, well, you know, it's doing okay, or okay, the consolidators are fine, or it's not doing okay. If it was another show, I bet you wouldn't be saying it. It's because it's Doctor Who, it's a show you like, you look for reasons to sort of quell the problem.
Yeah.
And there is a problem there. As I said, Christian, it's not sort of necessarily one that's going to destroy the show or means the show is badly created or the show is terrible, but there is certainly some issue which probably needs to be resolved to get it on par with what's going on. It should be falling behind X Factor.
Yeah, there's a lack of engagement with casual viewers, isn't there?
There should be a drop-off.
I just want to pull these figures out for you. Going back to the beginning of the series, Magician's Apprentice had 4.58 million on the overnights, 6.54 million final. Witch's Familiar dropped to 3.7 million on overnights, 5.71 on the final. Under the Lake, 3.7 million overnights, 5.63 on the final. Before the Flood jumped to 4.38 on the overnights, 6.05 million final figure. The Girl Who Died started with the overnight figure of 4.85 million and finished at 6.56 million. That's the largest of the series so far, and that's the final confirmed figure we've got. Last week, the overnight was 4.34. This week, the overnight's 3.87.
It's
struggling to get past 6.5 million, basically, with official figures.
I think it's a. I know you sort of were being a bit of an apologist for having to keep bringing this up, but I think it is something which is fascinating because it is relevant. I mean, there was a Facebook thread that another Doctor Who a fan, Alan Stevens, was going on. I mean, you saw this, Christian, about the viewing figures for Doctor Who in the 80s, looking at season 19 to season 22, and what were the factors there? And again, it's a very different time. And one of the interesting issues there is that season 18, as far as I recall, was about 7.5 average. Season 19, when Davison appeared, you get a massive spike to around about 9. Mm-hmm. And then seasons 20 and 21 drop back down to about 7, and it never picks up after that.
Well, season 19, that was the Monday and Tuesday, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of factors that come into it, and that's why it's fascinating. And I think one of the interesting things is it's very easy to analyse with today's sort of head. Because if you think back in 1982, you had three channels in the UK, Brian. I know you know Brian, but I'm using you as the gestalt for America.
No worries.
There was three channels. So, I mean, as I was saying to Alan, I was saying, you know, interesting that the figures stay pretty much consistent throughout the season, and that will be, I'd have thought, because the ritual you'll have is when you've only got two other channels to choose from, you're going to stick to a series pretty much, because unless the other two channels are showing something radically in your area, in your ballpark, which is unlikely, you're not going to shift particularly. So you get, but now we're in a different situation where you've got not just hundreds of channels, you've got DVDs, you've got Netflix, you've got all these sort of things. So you can actually start looking at individual weeks and start trying to work out what might be changing, or can you work out? I don't know. But it's such a different time for Doctor Who now as it was in then. And the other reason is, I think, was a big time for the Davison era was season after that, season 20, was when Channel 4 appeared. And video recorders started to really kick in. So you start to see changes in viewing habits. So I think these things are really interesting to actually talk about. And it doesn't necessarily mean you're trying to knock Stephen Moffat and his production. I think scheduling, as you say, Christian, is a very big issue. More so, maybe, than the actual content.
You know, that's a question I have, too, because I know it's happened quite a lot during the new series of Doctor Who, and I know that it even happened a little bit with the classic, but what were the air times for the episodes this season? Because here in America, it's always 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, but you guys, you fluctuate, and that's got to be tough for the casual viewer, even fans, to try and like watch this show around what time is it on this week.
Yeah. Well, back in 2005, it was on at between 7 and 7:15 every week, which is a good time. This year, it's been 8:30, 8:35, 8:45, I think the opening one. This week's was 8:15. So when you get into like 30 minutes between broadcast times, or week by week.
But there's also the factor that people end up sort of having sort of annual rituals as well. You tend to get used to Doctor Who being on around about 6 or 7. So even if it's on every time now at past 8, your brain, even I have it, my brain still thinks Doctor Who's on about between 6 and 7:30.
Yeah, which it has been during Moffat series. I mean, it's been all the way back to 6:20, 6:30, maybe 6 o'clock with the Christmas ones. It annoys the hell out of me that we have this conversation, not because we're having it, but that we have to have this conversation, because the Brian says, you know when Doctor Who's going to be on. If you're watching BBC America, you know where you need to be, when you need to be. And you know how long you've got to prepare and everything. And like on a week-to-week basis for British people, you don't have that advantage. You might press pause on your TiVo or whatever at the end of Strictly Come Dancing while you, I don't know, close the curtains or prepare a ginger beer or some shandy or some popcorn or nibbles for Doctor Who. But on the whole, it's Strictly Come Dancing's finishing and people are turning to the X Factor. Why they're turning to the X Factor, having watched it, a 2.5-hour show. But crying out loud, why does anyone want to watch anything for 2.5 hours?
But that's interesting, isn't it? Because again, you're talking the wide casual audience there. You're talking about audiences on Saturday nights, which are looking for simple entertainment while they're watching, while they're eating their food, chatting with their family. They're not looking to be massively engaged, which is possibly why you're seeing from Strictly, which is that sort of show, moving people migrating to X Factor, which is that sort of show. Doctor Who isn't, or certainly hasn't been for a long time. I still think, I look back to Russell T. Davis, even the more complicated episodes were pretty accessible. I can't think of any of that era where the episodes weren't easily accessible. And I know a lot of fans hated that and said it should be more complicated, but maybe that's exactly what the issue was. That maybe that was Davis's concern, was to make sure that it always fed into that audience which should have just come out of X Factor or Strictly or whatever lightweight thing had come on before, would feed into Doctor Who without feeling too challenged. And that was where you get the ratings. And maybe
Doctor
that's
Who
the problem.
Was beaten this week by pointless celebrities. Now, I don't want to draw too much attention to the fact that Doctor Who is beaten on the overnight by pointless celebrities. I want to draw more attention to the fact that surely there's a larger crossover between Doctor Who fans and pointless celebrity viewers, or Doctor Who viewers and pointless celebrity viewers, than there are between Strictly Come Dancing and Doctor Who viewers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would consider someone like my mum or someone from her generation to be a kind of quintessential Strictly Come Dancing viewer. My mum has no interest in Doctor Who, apart from when Peter Davison was cast as the Doctor. Other than that, she's had no interest in Doctor Who over 50 years, 50 plus years. So, I know, again, it comes back to the scheduling and the tone of the series and what the BBC are doing with it at that time slot. Comments. Luke Halsall, hello, Luke. Welcome back to another live podcast. He enjoyed it. Clara overstayed her welcome. Fact viewers think human Clara would find human Zygon suffering fun is troubling, as we've mentioned. Troopers marching into the death with Doctor and Rebecca Front. I'd have loved him to go Tucker, stating it was an omni-shambles. To be honest with you, some of the moments that the script took, I'm surprised he didn't, actually. The way this series has gone so far. Peter Harness. It's better than Kill the Moon so far for me, but...
something someone did say that I did like was that there was very few comic moments. I think it was one of our the Casterbus, whatever that place is called, Starfighters mentioned it, one of the threads, that there was very little silly humour in it. It was played very straight, and I admired
that.
Yes,
it was, yeah.
That was a good call.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I just want to underline, personally speaking, I enjoyed the episode, and I was pretty much gripped throughout, and I'd enjoyed the cinematography. It was fantastic. I wouldn't say completely throughout, because there's a few shots repeated, and a few of them, Kay Stewart wandering around, Truth and Consequences, a little bit flat in places, but overall, it was really well shot. They took advantage, I'm assuming they went to Spain for that. I know they did some of the Dalek two-part at the beginning was in Spain, so I'm imagining some of this was in Spain as well, because it's not particularly easy to recreate Mexico in Wales, or New Mexico in Wales, as far as I'm aware. Not the parts of Wales I've seen. Anyway, and so, what time? Yeah, we're 4 o'clock. So let's throw some figures around, guys. Remember, this is a two-part, so... we haven't got the full story of the Zygon invasion / the Zygon inversion. But if you were going to award a mark out of 10 for this story, James McLean?
Oh, fair. Do you know the thing that annoyed me most of this story, and I know we've mentioned this a bit, was the, and this makes me sound like a bit of a fan man, but the Harry Sullivan line really bugged me. That really irritated me. And one of our Casterbra somethings was sort of saying in one of the group threads that, well, you know, we didn't see the full story, maybe there's more to it. And yeah, I know, you can justify anything like that. The bottom line is, it didn't. With narrative, you take what you're told unless you're informed otherwise. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? That's the way it always, that's how we deal with fiction. It's how we deal with possible worlds. We take it on ground, we take it based on assertions of what we're told and what we understand in life, unless we're informed otherwise. And that's very explicitly said, that he was complicit in creating a most terrible nerve toxin. And that just didn't jive with me with the Sarah Jane Adventures, Elizabeth Sladen's comment about his really lovely good work. And yes, there could be a story behind that, you know, Harry Sullivan's war, I don't know.
Well, also, this is also the idea that a naval surgeon would be involved in.
Well, that as well, absolutely.
Bacterial or chemical warfare or something. That's just, yeah, all right. In your world, maybe, Stephen.
Maybe, or you know, maybe in prior to Robot, but after Genesis of the Daleks, you think the last thing he'd be doing would be helping, even the military. I would see him as objecting and going to prison and help develop chemical weapons after seeing Genesis of the Daleks. Well, I mean, being part of it, I've not seen the video, because that would be a very interesting story about meta moment. But yeah, so, yeah, that really bugged me. I'm going to have to give it a 5. It was not like Kill the Moon. It was not a bad story. It was not a bad episode. It's not awful. It just didn't chime with me in any way, and there was just too many inconsistencies for me to give it any more on the basis of it being good, but me not enjoying it. So I'm just going to have to give it a 5.
Okay, Brian.
I was happier, as we had said a little bit earlier here, that the comedy aspects were very light in this story, or they weren't overdrawn or just weren't there. It was nice to kind of see a straightforward story. As a matter of fact, one thing that actually made me extremely happy was in the beginning when the Doctor is in the playground trying to talk to those two little girls that he is believing are Zygons, and, you know, you as the audience are supposed to sit there and go, oh, this is going to be awkward for him when he finds out they're just two little girls. Mm-hmm. But they actually made them be Zygons, and I thought, well, that's great. They didn't have that awkward, the Doctor is some creepy old guy on a playground with children moment. Perfect. I liked that. I agree with the fan service things, like being in unit and walking past that shot of William Hartnell. The poor use, as you said, of Harry Sullivan. Osgood, of course, you know, why question marks on the after? Like, why do we even have to question why question marks? I've said this before, but there are things that you can do in a fan film, especially if you just want to do a fan film to really show that you're that particular type of fan, that just shouldn't be done in the show. And those things kind of bug me, and I don't mind references to the past. I love them. I'm one of those fans that thinks it's fantastic when you can actually get some great references in that actually mean something. Like, for instance, if they mentioned Harry Sullivan in a good light that was true to his character, I would have been happy to have had something like that, you know? But overall, aside from those things, the story didn't really capture me. I found myself sitting there most of the time going, well, this is what happened here, this is this, you know, Clara's a Zygon, the sheriff is a Zygon, those kind of moments, you know. They only fooled me with the little girls, and I was very happy to see that they did. But I found myself getting very distracted yet again while watching it, rather than sitting there being totally enthralled with the story or you know, ignoring a text message that may come in because, God forbid, I'm watching Doctor Who, I can't answer you right now. I found that any kind of distraction was kind of okay because I just kind of was watching the clock, watching the episode. So I'm going to have to agree with the 5 because that's what I gave the last episode that I felt this way about, was a 5. It wasn't horrible, but it wasn't fantastic. But it really didn't captivate me, and I'm hoping maybe next week we'll do something to improve that.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go in the other direction. I'm going to give it a 7. I think it was the most cohesive and enjoyable episode so far this season, and this has been a difficult season. So, I'm going to give it a 7. Come on, let's give Peter Harness some encouragement. If next week turns out to be crap, then we'll deal with it then. But, you know, we're only halfway through. Comments, Colin Grigson, who seems to be our kind of perpetual viewer today, says, just getting back to the episode, what did you guys make of the explanation for Osgood's return? I don't see how briefly altering someone's memory should turn a person into a hybrid of two species. Also, since when do Zygons shoot electricity out of their hands? I think the whole Zygon duplicate peace treaty thing is... I think the word hybrid was thrown in for a very good reason. Just to kind of muddy the waters for the story arc, So, I shouldn't worry too much about that, because I think it was just thrown there just to distract us. The electricity of the hands thing, Cybermen change their thing sometimes. There's no reason why Zygons, who appear to be far more powerful now that they don't need to keep the duplicates alive for some reason, maybe that's some sort of, because there's so many of them in one place, maybe it just generating some sort of telepathic assault. I'm making shit up, you know. I'm not the Doctor Who showrunner, but I'm making shit up.
But, I mean, the problem was, the reason they had duplicates from a story point of view is that it gave a weakness to... Because shape-changing can become an inherently powerful thing. And to a point, you know, do you need to put limits on it before it becomes unmanageable or your resolutions become stupid? And I hope they haven't done this really so they can get around some very simple dramatic plot devices or, you know, continuity devices. And that's, again, why I didn't really like Osgood. And I just think, really, she's dead. They needed to move on.
Yeah.
And, you know, fans needed to move on that. And I just don't think it serves anything. And the only thing it maybe serves is, you say, you two found that you enjoyed her a little more this time. So maybe her memory is...
Mm. Well, so it did feel to me...
Bringing Osgood back as well... it's not necessary for her, but the fact that she was killed in the first place is supposedly the reasoning behind what started this kind of conflict between the humans and the Zygons, which was killed by Missy last year. So that aspect of it, I thought that was something that sounded like that's a good, you know, they've thought this through. This is a good consequence for what would happen.
You don't need to have a peace treaty of two hybrid people for a group to fraction And no. You know, the Zygons had, you know, you could quite understand why some Zygons would feel that they've lost their identity, and others would sort of say, hey, you know, we are now being kindly allowed to cohabit a planet we don't have any right to, which has got its own problems, and we don't want to cause any more, you know. So you can see where that would happen. You don't need this peace treaty thing. In fact, it just makes it more messy. And the only reason it's there is to justify her coming back, essentially. That's how it seems to me.
Well, it was when she died last season, everybody immediately went to Zygon duplicate, you know, and it was just kind of, it was the obvious out. And granted, it's there. It is kind of the obvious thing that the writers would have to use to bring her back as well. But it was something that when I saw the story, it was just kind of like, oh, okay, so they just went with the obvious then, rather than something a little bit more interesting. Because I kind of had wondered, to be honest, if this story was actually going to be set prior to the Cybermen story, if maybe they were going to sit there and go, you all thought she was alive because of Zygon duplicate, but no, this story was just in the past, prior to her death. And I thought that would have been actually better for the Doctor to have had that kind of foreknowledge of her future kind of thing, but... Mm-hmm. And maybe like the whole Zygon situation gets resolved in this story, and the Zygons go their separate way, and the humans go their separate way, and oh, sorry, fans, but you know, Osgood did die. But they didn't go there; they just went with the obvious. And that, I agree, that did bug me a little bit. Like I think the only thing that endeared her a little bit more to me now was the fact that she was somebody who was trying very hard to keep this. This peace treaty going, and she had her own belief system on that, regardless of whichever Osgood she is. That was just the only thing that had got me going, because pretty much everybody, including the Doctor, was kind of just like, well, screw the bastards, let's kill them. You know, and it was just kind of like, what the hell? What's going on here? It's really weird. You know, and she was the only one that was for it. But, yeah, I don't know.
It'd have been better if in the first episode, where they had a large chunk where they had to shove UNIT into it, if they had made some setup for this in that early episode, early part of the first act of the first episode of the series, because it still just feels like you created, and it's what you said earlier, Brian, 20 million Zygons on the planet. Yeah. Suddenly there's a catastrophe about this, but we've never heard about this happening before. We have no idea about it. It limits your ability to get involved in the situation now, and it limits your ability to believe in the situation before it. So if nothing else, it should have had some reference in that early episode, in that first. It's just too big a thing to just sort of say, oh, yeah, by the way, this has been happening, and it's all going to pot now. And it's like, well, I don't really know what's going on. I don't know how to invest in this. I don't understand what the Doctor will really got involved in. It just feels like, it would have been better if the Doctor had been involved in it and had sort of forgotten about it and back and found that they've been having to desperately sort this whole issue out, and it had all fallen apart. And they got into this situation where they've got 20 million Zygons now, who a load of them were quite literally revolting and quite philosophically revolting as well. So you see what I did there.
Yeah. I think so. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Well, you know, it's very rare that we all agree about everything on the podcast. So let's probably decide that now is the time to move on from this particular thing, which was the invasion of the Zygons in Doctor Who Series 9. I'm just looking for something that that popped up earlier that I thought was nice to share, but don't seem to be able to find it. No, is it there? It's not there, is it? No. That's a shame. Basically, the bit when the Doctor's playing the guitar at the beginning.
Yeah.
He's playing Amazing Grace on the guitar, and Daphne Ashbrook was watching, and she shared it on there.
Nice.
Yeah. She shared it. Yeah, I'll show you it here, because I was trying to bring it in, but the YouTube app's... YouTube bit's not let me do that, so let's just kill that. So can you see that okay? That was nice. Speaking of Daphne Ashbrook, she's at New York for the LI Who convention on November 13th to the 15th with Paul McGann and a few other people, Matthew Jacobs. who wrote the TV movie. So, questions. Have you guys bought your tickets for The Force Awakens yet?
No.
No, I have.
When are you seeing it?
I'm seeing it on the 20th, I think, the 20th.
I had a friend ask me yesterday if we were going to see it, and I told him I'm interested in seeing it. I would love to go see it with him, but I said I just didn't buy tickets. I didn't feel like being part of that whole internet frenzy and so on. I want to see it, but it's like I don't need to be the first one in line kind of thing.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Hopefully we'll get tickets relatively soon, because yeah, I definitely do want to see it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've not done it to let's everyone go and see it on the first night or anything like that. I basically did it because that was the only night that Kerry and I found that we had free. Because Maurice is a counsellor, dear listener, okay, or viewer, in case you weren't aware. So, meetings, that kind of thing. I'm really, really looking forward to it. I don't have exceedingly great expectations. As long as it's better than The Phantom Menace, I'm happy. So, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't want to disparage Attack of the Clones or the Rise of the Sith or whatever it's called, but obviously, to anyone with any general appreciation of it, Phantom Menace is the best of the three, so it has to be better than Phantom Menace. So so that's my December treat. Is that
recommendations? I'm glad you asked, because I love that bit of the show when we do recommendations.
Whoa.
I was just watching before this Bells of St. John. Because it was just on the television.
Okay.
It was just quite a nice timing, because it had Clara for her first disincarnation in it, and it had Matt Smith, and I was watching it, and I thought, this is really, really enjoyable. We enjoyed it at the time, remember, we all enjoyed it. Mm. We all gave a very good rating, and I enjoyed it even more, because Clara just seems so much more naturally written as a person, quite a plucky little person, still plucky, which they all have to be, but more a person, her script was more natural, and it was just such a pleasant, and it's such a pleasant story, and Matt Smith's so good in it as well, and I couldn't imagine, and that's just things we talked about, I couldn't imagine Matt Smith's doctor standing behind that soldier and letting all those soldiers run into that place, into the building. I couldn't imagine him staying static for that long, and that interests me, because obviously I don't think it's anything to do with Peter Capaldi. I don't think he sort of said, excuse me, I think my character and my doctor will stand here.
I was going to say that, because before this week I can't imagine Peter Capaldi started doing that.
Well, that's it, but then, you know, he was pretty pretty innate in the finale, wasn't he, the last season as well. The same circumstance, but he has these moments which I couldn't imagine them writing for Matt Smith's Doctor, where he doesn't feel consistent or in control, as the Doctor seems to be written in every other incarnation. It's really weird. It's only this Doctor they seem to do it with. And it doesn't feel like it's character-led. It doesn't feel like there's any motivation for it. It's just occasionally he just dithers.
So it's bad writing?
It feels that way. The only thing you could argue is maybe they just don't still know really what this Doctor's about.
Well, and I think after what we've seen so far, I think they probably do. Peter Harness, professional writer, he's going to get a savaging from people who didn't like this episode following Kill the Mood. Kill the Mood.
No, that's very apt. Keep that title.
Kill the mood. Oh dear. I'm so sorry. That was in advert.
You wine and diner, second from television with a candlelight dinner, and then you put on Kill the Moon. You kill the
moon. Watch that one for Netflix and chill.
Yeah. Totally. I don't know what happened there. But no, I don't know. I know he's got his electric guitar this season, which seems to be inferred that that's his character down and pat now. But yeah. And his glasses. But you shouldn't have a moment where the Doctor is like that.
I agree with the guitar thing. I like that he plays guitar. I think that's fun, and I get that it's his recorder and so on. But it kind of seems like, at least going by the past couple of episodes, all he does going on adventures is...
Oh, we're all doing it now.
Okay. Well,
I'm going to get mine then, if we're doing this.
Okay, go for it.
All right. Oh, I locked the case. Screw it. It's happening. But no, having him play the guitar every episode instead of going on adventures just feels a little strange to me, you know?
Is that a flying V?
A flying V.
A flying V? What the
and
hell?
And orbit attached to it as well, which was loosely hung over the top of it.
Look, we're all doctors, though, guys. We should be saving the universe or something. Next week on the podcast with a K, the musical version.
Oh, right, I've just got the 12 string. Well, calm down then. Slight diversion there, dear listener. One for the viewers.
Nerds. One Nerd for rockers. The Although, I have to say, I mean, I like that.
Rock nerds!
I do think that is fun, but it is a little weird just seeing him only do that anymore. I will also say, real quick, with back to the episode, because I did want to leave on one kind of sort of positive thing with it. I actually like the evil Clara aspect, but it may not be such a positive note now, because the reason I say that is because I'm wondering if it's going to actually give Jenna some meat to play with as a character. I'm hoping they utilize it well and don't just make it a two-dimensional character. They do something interesting with it, because I was a little pleased with that aspect, that actual Clara wasn't there and we had something else in her place. Although, watch, I say that, and then next episode they'll probably wake Clara up within the first 5 seconds.
Well, they need to do something with it, don't they, really? Let's face it. Right, well, do you know what? I think we've probably come towards the end of this week's podcast with a K, unless someone's got anything ground-shakingly honest that they want to say. I want to move on into. I mean, we have got a lot of stuff going on with the various arcs that are going on this series. But I'm wondering whether we might be better off talking about that next week when we know a bit more about sort of how things are going. We've got, you know, the Minister of War and what's going on with Missy, Missy's escape, the whole thing with Ashilda, the Confession Dar, which some people think might turn up again, Clara. Some people think Clara's going to regenerate after what happened in the first story. Then there's the whole hybrid thing. Maybe Clara's the hybrid, maybe Ashilda's the hybrid. That brings us to the end of this week's Doctor Who podcast with a K. So until next time, dear viewer, dear listener, we would like to bade you a fond wellness on your journey throughout this preceding 7 days, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.